Aristotle understood that. But you cannot imagine time without motion. Time is motion. Regardless. But time will pass by. It is. Time is always on the move. You'll be left out. If a boy, for instance, the precious possession for a young man is time. When I say young man, I don't mean a boy in the teenager, I mean in the younger. I would say up to 40 is the precious, most precious possession of time. Because still the mind is absorptive, the mind is fertile and absorptive. The retention, power of retention is still perfect, still good, at 40, still good. At least it was good when I was 40. Before I can acquire a lot of knowledge, I can enrich my personality. I can actually accumulate knowledge in the same way as people try to accumulate money, gold. But what do you have from gold? Even if accumulated? Nothing. But if you accumulate knowledge, it means you exalt your own personality, you enhance your mind, you become sensitive, you gain wisdom, intuitive wisdom, and so forth. If you utilize time, that means that time possesses, that you possess time. If one is negligent and let time pass, it means he is possessed by time, time on him. He's shaped and influenced by time in simple way. It's exactly right. It refers not only to individuals, to nations as well. Take for instance a nation like China, an ancient nation, thousands of years. And actually, if you compare what China has accomplished in the last 10, 15 years, mechanically, scientifically, as far as prestige in the world is concerned. Don't forget that in 1937, I believe, I don't remember the year exactly, Japan attacked China and invaded a large part of China. And China was completely powerless, couldn't defend itself. But then the United Nations, not the United Nations, the League of Nations fell apart because of that. It means the thousands of years were wasted. And take a country like America, how old is the United States? 200 years. What the United States has accomplished in 200 years is amazing. To me, it is a phenomenon which is almost borders on the miraculous. If you compare it to the historical development, is usually slow and peaceful. And the giant steps America made in all fields, scientific field, technological field, of course, economic field, are amazing. America took hold of time. Time is something qualitative, not only quantitative. It is the clock on the world. Time is a qualitative, it's a great experience. And some people can get hold of time and harness time and direct time for a great goal. And some people are dragged along. Youth person, legal age person. Before you realize you're all foolish and poor. By nature I was not lazy, I'm not a lazy person, and a diligent person. I don't try to pray. But now looking backward, I feel sometimes that I've wasted too much time. But I know what knowledge means to a person. No person can appreciate knowledge as the old person. If knowledge is important to the person, the middle-aged person, certainly important when a man reaches old age. Very important, because the whole world of the old man, if he's ignorant, is a very bleak and dreary world. Very bleak. That's what I'll say. The person is ignorant, the older it gets, the more ignorant. But Zikne told me the Chachamim, scholars, intelligent persons have stored up knowledge, we have reserved wisdom and knowledge, called notion as spinning data, Mr. Pekalani. Their intelligence becomes more exalted. And it is true. The question now of the senior citizen, what is the question? You know what the question is? The senior citizen, who has no pride, not speaking about economic problems, I mean the psychological problem. Who has nothing to do, I mean, he has financial security, I mean, but he has no knowledge, he doesn't know how to spend time. So if he can't spend time properly, so he begins to think about his age and about death and gets frightened. And that's exactly what this is, the tragedy of the senior citizen. Matter of fact, I've never seen old, I've known in my life a many old men, but I don't remember that an old man should be dejected, depression because of old age. It's something new it's just something new which is due to our modern life and our outlook life. Zikne on the contrary, Zikne used to inspire a person, implant pride, giving a sense of pride and understanding. Of course, society handles it differently than the modern society, contemporary society. But the question of time. Let's return back to Matisseau, return to Matisseau. The name Matisseau Bonheur means the time which belongs to Matisseau. They have utilized, I don't know how, just a couple of years, to the utmost, to the fullest extent. And that's all what we say about Matisseau Bonheur. We don't thank them, we just say there was a period which is named after Matisseau Bonheur. It was their period, their challenge. Each period has a challenge for them. Each day, each age confronts men with a challenge, to be summoned, with a demand. Some people understand and some people comply, and they respond to the challenge. Matisseau Bonheur has responded to the challenge of their time. This is why he may not be so. All right, let's continue. Next. Matisseau. What kind of a name is it? Matisseau. What kind of a name? It's a typical Jewish name. It is plain, in plain English, it is Theodore. Correct me. The plain English is Theodore. What does Matisseau mean? Given by God. A gift from God. A present from God. Matisseau means a present from God. Matas ko. Matas, the present, ko. From the Almighty. A gift from God. The name is very significant. Why is it so significant? It then could have been Shimon or Reuven or Yehuda or Levi. What had happened? If you want to say it's just a coincidence. I don't believe in coincidences in Jewish history. But in Jewish history, we are full of coincidences, so you would not exist. It would have been wiped off the face of the earth. There is no coincidence in Jewish history. Why was he called Matisseau? Will something come again? It is something which is very typical of the Jewish philosophy of history. Matasyo. Matasko. Matasko. We have most biblical names. Yeshayo. Yeshayo means God should help. So forth. Yehochot. And so forth. But Matasyo means the gift, the present of God. There's another name which is similar to Matasyo, namely. Yeinoson, given by God. But Matisseau is more, I would say, expresses more the idea, reflects a certain idea, which is very important. Very important. Certain idea. Matisseau, the gift of God, the presence of God. You know, there is no problem in philosophy, no problem going back. Known is the problem because Carlyle took such a radical stand on Well, it was really in antiquity already the problem was known, the Greek philosophers. In history, actually, who determines history? The crowd or the individual? Who makes history? Who makes history? Who makes history? You know, Carlyle said, you know, that individuals make history. Napoleon made it. Napoleon hadn't been born. Who knows? History would have had a different, there would be a different historical destiny, European destiny, and so forth. And you know, Marxism insists that history is made by the crowd, by the mass. Doesn't matter, I mean, by the class, by the labor, the class of society, by labor, all that doesn't matter. What are Jewish viewpoint about it? Sometimes I'm inclined to accept Carlyle's theory that the individual makes history. If in 1956, Eisenhower had been president in 1956, with the state secretary of the Egypt, Dallas, we would have had all problems pertaining to the state of Israel resolved. That time when they joined Russia in condemning them with the occupation of the China Peninsula and the insistence in which they demanded France and England, the Jews, Israel should retreat and withdraw, you know, and Israel complied with the demand. Eisenhower went on radio and so forth. That's responsible for all the trouble. Of course, the individual has a great influence, no doubt about it. But who makes it? What is Jewish people in the world? Of course, God makes it, but what is the instrument? Of course, this is true. God makes history and he is. Ish Mohammed. What I mean, he employs man as instrument. And the tool with which he realizes his will, his scheme. So who plays the important role? Who plays the important role? The individual or the community, I should say, or the crowd? The community or the crowd? Who plays the important role? It is a It's very hard, I mean, to simply just accept one theory and reject the other one. I mean, there is some truth to both of them. I don't know, I'll just quote a medrash for you, and I believe the medrash will tell you what it, I mean, will review, I mean, and solve the problem. Rav gam deiz b'nei som dere tzeyem, le'na'astim le'ga'altim, le'chaleisom lo'ke bris yitom, And even though when they'll be in the land of their enemies, I have not rejected them, nor have I forsaken them, because I remember the covenant of Amitra. Not on the Mitra, the Gemara already said. So I'm Gamzei, the Yisrael, the Eretz Israel, when I asked him, I haven't rejected them because I gave them Mordechai and Esther, the Shishan of Yom. For the time of crisis. Time of crisis. Lechaleisom, Legealtim, Shemadithi lehem Matisyo Bona. I gave them Matisyo and Shulam. The Mechash Minayim. In the time of the Maccabim, in order to hold them. Legiauti, Lof Abris, Nitom. The Gemara says, so the Medrash says, Shemaditi Lehem Rebbe, the Chavira. Rebbe was very friendly with the governor of Israel, the Roman governor, and he protected the community from many cruel edicts and ruthless policies. It's very strange. The Medrash tries to explain that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even though he exiled the people from Eretz Yisrael, and they were dispersed all over the world, but in times of crisis, in times of disaster of Armenia, was about to strike, he protected them. So the Medrash could have said, Vav gam zeiz b'yeisam b'eretz yisrael le'im ha'ashtim, I haven't rejected them, I haven't rejected them, I have helped them, the name Mordechai, the rest of the Shushan Abiru, I helped them, simply. Haman failed in carrying out his plan. And then Rafa Brisi, the Dalton, Rafa Brisi, said, Sheishaitei Tom, B'nei Chashmenoim, I helped them. And that was not true that God helped them. That's why we could prove that God has never forgotten or forsaken the people. And the man says, I gave them in certain individuals. I gave them Mordechai Esther, I gave them Matisio Bonov, I gave them Ezra the Chavero, Rebbe the Chavero. You see what you derive from that Mordechai is that it is the individual plays a very important role. Nothing conflicts what I said before. That later when an individual discharges his duty, he retreats into anonymity. But as long as the individual is necessary and his presence is indispensable, so the individual plays a great role in that. And sometimes, for instance, if Mordechai had not been in Shushan Abiru, and Esther, hadn't been the queen, certain events which actually led up to her selection as queen, certain events hadn't taken place, the Jews would have been in terrible dilemma, you understand very well. So the role of the individual and the fact that Matisyahu lived in that in a certain era, in a certain epoch, was the gift of God. The individual inspires the crowd. The individual is the prophet. We are rounded the power of the community. The final accomplishment belongs to the community. But however, the individual is the teacher. When Carlyle spoke about hero, there are no heroes in Jewish history. There's only one hero in Jewish history. Namely the Almighty. The Shem Gidon Muhammad. There are no heroes in Jewish history. Human heroes don't exist. They've never worshipped heroes. They've never deified heroes. Take for instance the German history, they deified heroes. And the same is true in the Greek mythology. I mean, they deify heroes. The Jews have never deified any hero. They always knew that the greatest of heroes is a human being. As my man, as Chazal says, Ayim Khan today is here on the Mohammed Teran, tomorrow is in the grave. I mean, there's no hero worship. But as I said before, there is gratitude, there is appreciation. Not idolization, but appreciation. Gratitude. The individual is the teacher, not the prophet, the teacher, not the hero. He inspires, he arouses, he leads. And then, the community takes over. When the Jews, for instance, have made the golden calf, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told nation Lechrei, the same. And the Medrash says, Kulum nasatil of the Gula, I bestowed glory upon thee, and of the Shvil Yisrael, not for your sake, but for the sake of the community. And the community, so to say, has committed to sin and lost its glory, so you cannot retain your glory. You have to defend. It's a strange combination. The individual is important. Not as a hero, as a teacher. What is Matisyahu a teacher? Interesting, it's Chazal speak of Matisyahu Bonov as Bezdin Chashmenoi, the Bezdin of the Chashmenoi. And this Matisyahu Bonov were, what shall I say, Rabbonim. But these Rabbonim, they comprise the Bezdin. As a matter of fact, there are many halachot with the Gemara attribute to Bezdin Shel Chashmenoi. Many halachos, many laws, takanos, interpretations, they did not attribute to them as a is the teacher, not the hero. As a teacher, the individual is very important. So the relation, even David HaMelech. You know, when you study the Gemara Brachos about David, you get the impression that Chazal had a tendency to portray David not as a king, as a warrior, but as a Rosh Hashanah. And it's not the fault of Chazal. It's Psalm, and David describes himself, portrays himself as a teacher, as a student. And the teacher is more interested in law, in halacha, then strategy and military strategy or warfare. Why did Chazal do it? Why did Chazal try to project the image of David, which Kavafakia is incomprehensible? David is a great warrior, the hero on the field of battle. David and Job and Yeov, two pals, two friends, commander in chief, the united, Eretz Yisrael, the Jewish people, and we extended the borders of Eretz Yisrael, both south and north, in the west and in the east. Why is it? Because the greatest person we have it is the teacher, not the teacher. Not the teacher. We're not interested in him. And if we respect the king, and if we appreciate him, and if we remember him with love and tenderness, it's because the king becomes the teacher. Because already in Chumash, boy, the shift of teacher and the as soon as they'll sit on it, they'll sit down on its throne, the Kosavleyes Mishne Akirazay, right away has to order on him, somebody should write for him the Akirazay, the Korobay Koyim Echayim, and he should study the Torah all his life, without interruption. He's already the king of the Torah. It's not the Platonic philosopher, not that. There's nothing that is coming, but the king is the great teacher. David Sheves Tachkemeni, the Gemara says, David spent his time in the day, in Halachic debate. The Hashmonaim are also teacher. That's Matas first. Because you don't believe in just arousing people emotionally. We don't believe in that. We don't believe in this revival method. It's a Christian, it's an old Christian approach on revivalism. It goes back to the early period of Christianity. They never taught anybody. Christians, they never taught anybody. They tried to indoctrinate and brainwash, to inspire by performing miracles and whatnot. The relationship was a purely emotional one. This is how the gospel is. While in Yahadus, we never try to inspire. We have always tried to teach. There's a lot to be taught in that. Matas Poh, because Matisyo was a great teacher. And every teacher, the individual, plays a great role. But there is one difference between the teacher and the viewer. The teacher must have his student. There is no teacher without students. And the worth of the teacher is always dependent, the value of the teacher, upon the students. They determine the value of me. They appreciate it. And that is what Matis Yoh was. Matis Yoh. Chazal call him Bezdin Shal Hashmonai. Never Hashmonai, Bezdin Shal Hashmonai. It is a Bezdin, the court of the Sanhedrin of the Hashmonai. Matisse apparently was the race of the chief justice. Now let's continue. Malchus Yovan Osho. Malchus Yovan Osho, the wicked kingdom of Yovan. Yovan is Greek. Actually, it wasn't Greek, I told you. It was in the post-Alexandrian period. And his empire fell apart, disintegrated. And then and the Syrian kingdom, his branch, actually, invaded the Near East. So why do you call it Malchus Yovan Osho? The authors of the Alanisim knew very well who the enemy was. Didn't make any sense. They were not ignorant of the fact that that the enemy did not consist of Greeks, of genuine Greeks. Another people, another kind of race, who knows what kind of race it was at the time, which were just assimilated into the Greek culture. They assimilated to the language, most probably, probably the higher part of society. I don't believe that everybody spoke Greek at the time. But the higher, the intelligentsia, the ruling class probably spoke Greek. They used to be dressed like Greek. Their habits and mores were Greek, Hellenistic. That's all. Why does the Mechaber, whoever he was, the author, might be quite possible that he was a contemporary of the Cheshbonai, who knows? Colossus identified him as Greek, Marcus Yevon also. Why blame Yevon for something which Yevon has never committed? Done for a crime which Yevon agrees has never committed. Somebody else committed it. Why is it called Marcus Yevon also? It's not a mistake, it's not an error. I mean, I told this part with them, they knew where they are. I mean, they knew very well who they are and what they are. The Maccabees knew very well who their enemy was. There was no problem of misrepresentation or why did he identify the identity of the enemy, Malchus Yevon HaShoa? Why? Basically, what happened that time? What happened? What was new in history, in Jewish history, in the pre-Maccabean period? I mean, the pre-Maccabean before the war broke out. What was? What was? Something strange happened. It was the first time the Jewish history was confronted with something new. With something new, with a new phenomenon. With something which simply the contemporaries of Matisseau couldn't understand. It was a new experience, a strange alien experience. What happened? What happened? The first time in Jewish history, then it occurred and reoccurred on me quite frequently. What was it? No. My example of Jews have been happy during Tachos time and whole Tanakh is. No. Religious persecution. Religious persecution. We have never met with religious persecution. To prevent Jews from observing the law and make them violent, the basic principle of Yahadut is the first experience in the Jewish era. Before that, religious persecution was unknown. The first time the people Chedutas Adar, religious persecution. That was the first time. Before we don't know. All right, I mean. There were times of deviationism in Jewish history, yes. But idolatry and so forth. Deviationism. But persecution of those who wanted to observe, to abide. This was the first experience in which our people were in the pre-Maccabean period. There was no religious persecution in Jewish history before that. The first time. And basically many laws pertaining to Kiddush Hashem, and Pekuach Nefesh, especially if somebody actually, a tyrant, forces a Jew to violate the law, what is the Jew supposed to do under the threat of death, should he incur death, martyrdom, and observe the law, or should he give in for a while? Read all the laws, Yorek Vayavar, Yarevar Yorek. Of course, they were later formulated in the time, in the post-Beter, the post-Bar Kokhba debacle. But the laws were formed, the beginning of the laws is to be found in the pre-Maccabean period. Whereas the Jew already was confronted with a new problem, a new shaila. How should he act? If some tyrant tells him, either you worship the idol, or you'll be killed. And he said, Kiddush Hashem, the problem of Kiddush Hashem emerged in the pre-Maccabean. And therefore, the fact that they defiled the Beit HaMikdash was not because of carelessness, no. It was a malicious act. It was a part of the scheme of the Beit HaMikdash. after the religious persecution. Well, now, what was his duty? Why? Responsible for it is Greek, is the Greek culture. The disdain, because when Alexander Magnus, actually, when Alexander Magnus began to extend his empire, and he wanted to conquer, he had a dream of conquering the world, and he was killed on his march to India. But then his dream was not just a dream of conquering the world, they're very strange. You say, was not a dream just of conquering the world for the sake of conquest, for the sake of power. He was a missionary. A missionary from whom? A Greek culture. To bring the Greek message or the Greek gospel to every primitive barbarian tribe or nation. And the whole world consists of barbarians. So the whole world was, you know, divided into two sects, into two groups, the Hellenes and the barbarians. And his job was to civilize the world, as the British Empire later, right to do. British Empire, also Germany, not during Hitler's time, but 1914, the First World War, and Germany declared the war on England and France and Russia, it also was imbued with the spirit, the missionary spirit, to bring the German culture, the Deutsche culture, to all barbarian people. Who is barbarian, ever is not a German, does not wear a uniform as the Reichswehr. This was Alexander movie. And that exactly when the people get and develops a fixation of mission, there's one exemption to that rule, exception to that rule. The Jew, now explain to you why. When the people develop the idea of mission, that I have to conquer the world in order to civilize it, or in order to raise mankind in a state of barbarity and primitiveness, to that of civilization and culture, religious persecution is inevitable. Because the barbarians don't want to be taught. And the barbarians think that their code, moral code, is just as good as that of Plato and Aristotle. And so don't forget, Aristotle was the teacher of Alexander Magnus. And that their morality is as high as that of the cultured and sophisticated Greeks. But when you begin, they refuse to accept the moral code, the gospel which is offered by the Greeks. So once they refuse to accept the moral code, the gospel which is offered by the Greeks, so what is the result? Persecution, you try to enforce it. You try to impose it. And that leads to persecution. That was true with regard to Christianity too. Christianity is also a missionary religion. We are not a missionary religion. We don't want to bring our Bible to the entire world. We'll never try. On the contrary, we are reluctant to accept guilt. I mean, you know what's going on in Israel now. Somebody comes to the priest, he wants to convert to Christianity. He would do it immediately. I mean, but on the contrary, I mean, they are trying, I mean, to get his snatched souls as many as possible. And here comes the years, Rabbi Yisrael says, come back in a year, 2 years. All right, that's what it is. The UN cries in Yisrael, the Rabbi are machmirim as far as conversion to God. We are not reluctant to accept Gary. We are reluctant. For many reasons, I'm going to write that. Anyway. Yeah. So you've never been a missionary. We got it here for ourselves. We don't want to sell it to anybody else. No export business. We don't want to raise the mankind from primitiveness to an exalted position of humanity. We don't want. We are not missionaries. Had we been missionaries, we could have captured the world, you know. Had we been missionaries. So Rome, when Rome was about to take off idolatry, during that twilight period at home, in the hundreds and hundreds of aristocratic families which converted to Judaism, even the imperial family had members who secretly, clandestinely, professed Judaism. If we were a missionary people, we would have proselytized Rome, not the Christians. And if we had proselytized Rome, you know what would have happened? Well, Europe would have been Jewish. I always think about it, and it's kind of a good image. But the kind of Judaism which would have evolved if actually we had been converted from Judaism. Perhaps the whole world would be a different world. But destiny of man can be different. I don't know. But we are not a missionary people. Thus, there is no religious persecution now, and we started to use the persecutor. And false other people, on the contrary. The Rambam says, I mean, you cannot tell a non-Jew to observe Jewish law, because the Jewish law was given to the Jew, he has no right to impose it. Or you can demand some other people to observe the same mitzvah. Same mitzvah are simply are the foundation of civilized life. Against idolatry, murder, incest. The requirement for a civil code, for civilized life, for civil justice, that's all. Because we are not a missionary people. And then we could have captured the East, the Orient. It was before Mohammed came. Also, the Arab tribes, the many Arab tribes, which were primitive idolaters, pagans, began to doubt the worth and the value of their polytheistic religion. And there were many converts to Judaism already. As a matter of fact, in the Dinah, there were many. And Mohammed's anti-Semitism was due to the fact that the Jews opposed him. And the Jews had been more dynamic, more mission conscious, and more aggressive and bolder, they would have converted all Arabs. Again, I'm asking, what kind of a Jew we would have now? But this is true. You see the Maimon Chazal, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu came and offered the Torah to Esau, which means Rome. Esau is always Rome. And he offered the Torah to the Yishmael of Bnei Leih, and that is the Arab population. It's not just a stone. Based on, it's not just a story, it is history. There was a time when it was, there was a distinct possibility to convert Esau, meaning Rome, to Judaism. And by converting Esau to Judaism, we would have conquered the European country. Because Rome was being the center of civilization and culture. But somehow we have not succeeded. And the reason is because we are not Christians. There's a lack of aggressiveness on our part. We are not bold. We are more inner directed, introspective as a group. And we are not interested in that. So we are now 40 million people. That's all. It could have been 500 million. And that's exactly Alexander Magnus. He was the first missionary, actually. He combined military tactics with three cultures. He conquered the land, not only to control the land politically, but to implant Greek culture, Greek ideas, Greek code of ethics, and so forth. Of course, he failed. He failed miserably, but those who succeeded him still retained the idea of spreading and disseminating Greek culture, philosophy. And of course, Judea refused. The Judea resisted, did not succumb. So religious persecution was initiated. Our refusal to comply with the missionary complex of the Syriac, Hellenized Syriac, actually was the reason for introducing religious persecution. But basically, the people are not Greek, but we are responsible for it. The Greek mentality, the Greek culture, grief vanity, grief pride. The idea that the whole world consists of that vanity. Only the heavens are cold. The metaphor is very important. I told it last year to somebody from me. From the hierarchy in Rome, from the Catholic hierarchy in Rome. He asked me a question. He said, why is the... He said that they are not responsible, not only they are not responsible for the Hitler Holocaust, but more than that, they helped Jews during the Hitler period. You say, in terms of statistics, very hard to contradict him, nor really. You see, some did help, some did help, some didn't. The Poles, the priesthood in Poland were cooperated, with certain exceptions to the Nazis. The Gestapo cooperated. As a matter of fact, I read the memoirs of a Jew who was disguised as a Catholic and a Goy during the Hitler occupation of Poland. And he once came to confess for confession, and he confessed to the police that he doesn't know it, but he doesn't know whether it was a sin or it's a goody that he saved the Jew, protects the Jew, and prevents him from falling into the hands of the Gestapo. The priest told him it is a venial sin, repent, and next time when you see the Jew, you can deliver him to the Gestapo. I mean, the Jew later wrote memoirs. There were certain priests who helped you. Not too many, there were. In Italy, the situation was much better. The Italian priests were helpful. Not all of them, but. And so forth on. To say that the Catholic Church actually stood up and protected the Jews courageously would be gross exaggeration. But I told him something else. I said I can't argue with him about the statistics, numbers, I don't know. It's very hard to guess. I know of certain incidents, I mean, both positive and negative incidents. I mean, I cannot argue. But I told him something else. Of course Hitler was not a Christian. He kept on telling me Hitler was not a Christian. Of course, he was not a Christian. He was a pagan. He was worthless. Yeah. Of course. I mean, holy believe Hitler's group and friends, none of them was a pious Christian or Christian. No doubt about it. Hitler so was a Catholic. So was Gabriel, and so was, I believe, Gary. I don't remember myself. Anyway, but I told him about something else. If we think about the Hitler Holocaust, millions of Christians, different people, civilized people, culture people, Germany, France, Holland, and so forth, the Baltic countries, have witnessed the slaughter of 6 million Jews, among them little babies, infants. They used to swing them against the brick wall and slash their skulls. Yes. How is it possible? First of all, people sometimes cannot see a wounded dog without getting excited and trying to help the dog. To see actually the murder, selective murder extermination. I mean, extermination of old men, middle-aged children, and infants. It is due to something else. It is due to the preaching of the church throughout the centuries and millennia, throughout the past 1900 years, that the Jew was cursed by God because he rejected Christ. The Jew is a wandering Jew, has no home. And the Jew is responsible for the fact that Christ has not come back on the second time. He was supposed to, but he doesn't. He hasn't. And the Jew, finally, the idea that the Jew is subhuman is the Catholic idea. Of course, you may point out a few theologians in the Catholic Church who were more conscientious and more careful, but usually this is the concept of the Jew, which was supported, if not cultivated, by the Church and implanted in the Catholic, in the Christian by the Church. Now, of course, now perhaps you realize that it was a mistake, an error, a terrible error. Hitler was not a Catholic, but if not for your doctrine of the eternal Jew and the wandering Jew, and if not for your constant, continual actually preaching about the Jew But he, let me say, he blocks it. The arrival of your Messiah, the Hitler Holocaust couldn't have taken place. You are not perhaps directly responsible, but indirectly you are responsible. You are the culprit. You are the guilty. It's not a story about Christ killer and deified and the wandering Jew who renounced the stories about Judas and the Judas who identify every Jew. Mm-hmm. Such cruelty couldn't have been. Couldn't have been. Couldn't have taken place. Indirect, directly perhaps you're right. You are not responsible. Hitler, I wouldn't call it a case. But indirectly, it is your fault. And I say it in regard to Malchus Yovan Arisha. Indirectly, Greece was not responsible for the religious process. Directly. Now, I could have bunched out enough wild spirits. Who knows what kind of a race they were. We don't know who they were. But basically, it didn't belong to the Hellenes. Hitler, I wouldn't call it a race. But indirectly, it is your fault. And I say it in regard to Malchus Yovan Arisha. Indirectly, Greece was not responsible for the religious process. Directly. I could have bunched out enough wild spirits. Who knows what kind of a race they were. We don't know who they were. But basically, it didn't belong to the Hellenes. But indirectly, it is Alexander's mission, the pride of the Greeks, your contempt for everybody else. But
כשעומדו מלכוס יובון אורשו על עם חי ישראל. זאת אומרת, כשעומדו.
זאת אומרת, כשעומדו. לא רק מובן. זאת אומרת, כשעומדו. כשעומדו מלכוס יובון אורשו על עם חי ישראל. זאת אומרת, כשעומדו. מה יפה? What? No, but plainly literal. זאת אומרת, כשעומדו מלכוס יובון. Rolled up. To what? Why do you have to rise? There's no need to rise. What means Kesha Amda Malchus Yavon Arsha? Of course, literally means Kesha Amda rolled against by people. And the wicked Greek kingdom rolls against by people. Yeah. But what's Kesha Amda? What does Kesha Amda mean? There were many terms for it. Could have been used. Kesha Omdo means determination. Not just a decision. You see, sometimes you carry out and sometimes you react. You change your mind. But if there is a determination, it has got to be done. And that's the major objective of mine, you take Kesha Omdo. For instance, for Hitler, I want you to understand. For Hitler, anti-Semitism was not a secondary policy, or some peripheral approach, a peripheral philosophy. This was the major objective in the whole philosophy, the wicked philosophy of Nazism, is the destruction of the Jew was a major objective. As for instance, atheism is Marxism. We don't understand it. Why is it necessary for Marxism and socialism to adopt an atheist philosophy? But I don't know. It's a different problem. I don't know. But atheism in Marxism and communism is not just incidental, a peripheral doctrine. No. It is the very foundation of Marxism and communism. Why it is so, I don't know. I could never understand. Well, you know that in Germany they used to have the religious socialists, but what has never succeeded in attracting the masses, the communist socialist society is an atheist society. And to them, atheism is actually a religion itself. It's a kind of an idol. And it means to the Malchus, Yovan or Shor, whoever it was the religious persecution of destruction of Jewish identity was not just incidental. It was a major object. And I want you to know that anti-Semitism, anti-Semitism for the Christian, who is an anti-Semite, and I am far from being the one to look for anti-Semitism under the table or under the bed, or to identify, for instance, hooliganism on New York Street with anti-Semitism. To exaggerate is dangerous. To exaggerate is dangerous. Be careful of it. Not every act of a criminal or a hooligan, be red, be white, is to be classified as anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism is not hooliganism, I don't know. You are far from being hooliganism. I know what anti-Semitism is. Anti-Semitism can be very civilized. Civilized and sophisticated, and very refined. I mean, you don't know, Baruch Hashem, you don't know what anti-Semitism is. So you identify it with the wrong phenomena, not hooliganism. That's why this type of exaggeration is unhealthy, and it endangers our status in the United States. I mean, in this recent fear. I don't know who aroused that fear in us, but with this recent fear that our future here is not secure, very unhealthy for Americans. You don't have to convince the Goy that he's not Semitic. What the American Jew is doing now is trying to convince the Goy that he doesn't have it. They don't love it. It's a dangerous matter. I know in my private life, I've never tried to convince somebody that he's my enemy. If he told me he's my friend, I accept. Whether I believe him or not, he's even first. But I accept. But to try hard, it's a common finger. And the commentary does it now. The commentary, the obvious commentary now. Yes. That the Jews are insecure in the United States. You see, it's commentary in the paper which represents the assimilation. But suddenly, it's spreading panic among the Jews in the United States. Trying to convince the Jews, the Goy, actually, that he's not sincere when he says that he is a Semite. Anyway, let's forget about it. So, do you understand me? Anti-Semitism in general, for an anti-Semitic movement, is anti-Semitism never incidental, never peripheral, marginal. Very strange, we don't know why. When he was in Germany, the Deutschnational Party. The Deutschnational Party was the conservative. They represented the capitalists in Germany, industrially. There was no need for the Deutschnational to be anti-Semitic. But they were anti-Semitic. And anti-Semitism was the central, what shall I say, the central idea in their sort of political world outlook, political philosophy. And that's exactly. Kishomdo Malchus means determination. It means centrality. Not just incidental. Malchus Yoram had many problems. But one of the problems was, I mean, the subjugation of the spirit of the proud Judeans. They did not want to surrender to the Greek culture. No, it was not. Kishomdo means all the deeds, all the thoughts, everything was directed toward one ultimate goal, namely to subjugate the Jews. This is the word Kishomdo. Determined, relentless, inconsiderate. Very strange. It's one of the strange phenomena in history why anti-Semitism plays such an important role. There was no need for Hitler to be an anti-Semite. He could have gotten everything without this. It's quite possible if he hadn't been an anti-Semite. He would have gotten everything and a little more than that. So he might have won the war. Driving out the Jewish scientists of Germany, he could have gotten the atomic bomb before America. Quite fascinating. Anti-Semitism actually is responsible for Hitler's downfall. Of course, he fell before the atomic bomb was invented, was manufactured, produced, but he could have got it. It's quite fascinating. But this is Kishomdo Malchusyoron also. Alamcho Yisroel. What does it mean, Alamcho Yisroel? Two plain words. Don't require any interpretation. Alamcho Yisrael. Where they have the same expression. Where they have the same expression as it care. It comes from Yahmur, where does the same expression
Amcho Yisroel Vikar. Yeah. Chotu Ovu Poshe Lepanecho Amcho Yisroel. Kapano Lechatoim Velavenis Velavshoim. Sheposhu Veshechotu Sheovu Lepanecho. Sheochotu Sheovu Sheposhu Lepanecho Amcho Yisroel. What does Amcho Yisroel mean? Of course, thy people Israel. Of course, it's simple. Yeah. What does Amcho mean? To make Amcho Yisroel be echad b'oret. Also here. There is emphasis. Kishomdom machos yovam arsho alam Yisroel. You don't say alam Yisroel. You say al Amcho Yisroel. You could have said kishomdom machos yovam arsho al Yisroel. You said it. Or kishomdom machos yovam arsho al Amcho. Or alam Yisroel. No. None of those terms was chosen. Proper expression apparently is alam for you. Was alam for you sort of express? Yes. This is correct. This is the Ramban that saw in Aziz. That the hatred of the Jew is not because the enemy does not like the Jew. Due to some physiological traits or physiognomy, then by the nose or the color of the eyes or the hair of the Jew, is the Jew is committed. The Ramban says it's not it, because the Jew is committed to God. So basically, the enemy of the Jew is the enemy of God. It's not only the Ramban, Chazal says, Kum Radishem v'yafut v'yivecho, v'yenusu mitanecho mitanecho. Who are the enemies of God? I mean, what do you mean speaking enemy of God? What can the enemy do to God? So Rasha right there in Bamidva says, Zeu Elei Moshene Yisroel. Kol Hashene Yisroel, Mikro Shene Yisroel Kodesh Baruch Hu. You're correct. But there is something else. Amcho means we belong to thee. Amcho is a possessive noun, you know very well. We belong to thee. We belong to thee, even while we go astray and deviate from the righteous path. We are still committed to thee, but even when we are guilty of certain offenses and of certain sins. In Amcho, what comes to expression in Amcho is the old idea. The old idea. Yisroel af api shechoto, choto Yisroel. Yisroel af api shechoto, Yisroel. The Jew, even when he sins, he remains a Jew. What does it mean? What did Chazal, Rashi told us? What did Chazal want to express with this expression? Af api shechoto Yisroel. It means there is an eternal commitment in the Jew that is born. Sometimes it's a conscious commitment. Sometimes it's an unconscious commitment. But there is a commitment which can never be annulled, can never be severed. That commitment is like a load, like a heavy load, resting upon the same shoulder of every Jew. We might fight this commitment. We might hate this commitment. But there is a commitment in part of everything. The Jew is always, basically there is actually extended to men in general, but now we are not interested in that anymore. We make it a universal thing, that men is committed to that. But we are not interested in universal anymore. We are interested now in the particular angle, as far as the Jew is concerned. The Jew basically cannot cessor. It will completely, strip him of his inner joy and glory, he loses spiritual personality. Chabad call it Havu Ativis, the natural love for God that the Jew possesses. Whether he was trained or he wasn't trained, whether he wants to love God or he doesn't want, there is a natural instinctual drive, energy. Find God in the Jew. Many Jews who walk straight to that ultimate goal move in the right direction. Some Jews are searching for God, but they move, in their search, they move in the opposite direction. Of course, they are lost sheep. This is the natural, spontaneous drive in man, urging him for God. But it comes to expression with more vigor in the Jew. This is Amcho. We belong to the, there is no way how we can free ourselves from the Al-Amcho Israel. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you frankly, some people may think it's just a beautiful idea, but it's practically not correct. And many times I thought so. I began to think, to somehow approach this idea of Havotivit, or Amcho, means compulsory belonging on the part of the Jewish God. Willingly belongs to it. So I began to doubt that outlook, that philosophy. When I came to America, there was a tremendous assimilationist movement in America. It was assimilation, ugliest and most vulgar form of it. Particularly the first immigrants who came to America and gave up everything. And then you thought that Russian Jewry is completely lost. And there was no general commitment on the part of the Jews. We were a minority, a small minority, a limited minority, observing Jews. There was no institution of chinuch in the United States. We had a couple of day schools from there. We could never reach. Some towns, they were also disorganized. Batlonis were conducted in a Batlonis way. You couldn't be too optimistic about the philosophy of Amcho. That finally, the philosophy of Amcho. I am dying, willy-nilly. I belong to thee, whether I want it or I don't want it. Kayol tarek nafya, kayol tarek alfikimoy, nafya tarek lecho. I'm like the gazelle, he's thirsty for whatever. So I'm thirsty for God. It means spontaneously, instinctually. I began to simply to doubt whether it is true or not, even though it's a basic concept. The other. It's not, it doesn't go back to Chazal. Chazal developed it beautifully. Beautifully, particularly Tanya. I mean, the Likud HaTorah. But what is it all? It's an old idea. It's very optimistic. Vayima hu yitok ha-beshef ha-godel u-bo ha-ivdim ve-ha-tasho v-ha-nidochim ve-ha-tmetraim. It means the day of remembrance or of the day of awakening will arrive sooner or later. Beshef ha-godel might be an external sound, might be an eternal sound, an inner sound rather. Whether there is a shefa who will frighten the man or his conscience will inspire him, arouse him, I don't know. And even the evening, the people who are considered lost, they're attached to their tribe, will come back. But now two things happen lately, which actually corroborate the philosophy of Amcho Israel. One thing, if it is true, I don't know, I'm still skeptical, if there is really awakening among the Russian people. If it is true, I don't know. They tell me people who come from Russia, I spoke with many Russians, they tell me it is true. I still am skeptical. You know why I'm skeptical? Because it borders on the miraculous. Don't forget the revolution in Russia took place in 1917. November 1917. All right, now we are, Baruch Hashem, 1972. So it means two generations were raised in Russian school. 80s, from A to Z, materialistic in outlook on the world, on man, and particularly resentful. I don't know why, coming in resentful of Judaism, very resentful. I don't know why. In my opinion, it is most probably due to the fact that communism is a philosophy of atheism, as I told you. Atheism is not something marginal, incidental. It's basic and central to communism. And the Jew is the man who gives to the world monotheism. And a philosophy, a world, a community founded upon atheism must hate a community which has brought the world the gospel of faith in God. But whatever it is, you were raised as communists, as members of the Russian society. The need for awakening is taking place in Russia. And again, I emphasize, I have doubts whether it is true that it's just a phenomenon which is limited to a small segment of Russian Jewry, or it is a movement. But if it is a movement, is the philosophy of Amcho Yisrael correct 100%? Is after, I would say, 53, 54 years of Russian education and training, young men are ready to cast off, to shed the whole philosophy of communism, to go to Eretz Yisrael and identify themselves as Jews, that apparently there is something to be Jews, which is indicative of Amcho. We belong to the healing way. No one can take us away. Very strange. Because acknowledgement of being the Jew, be it secular, be it religious, is ipso facto an acknowledgement of belonging to God. This is number one. Number two, which fortifies my faith in the philosophy of Amcho Yisrael, is the remarkable commitment on the part of the American Jew to the state of Israel. It's also a miracle to me. I told you many times. Because it's not so simple. It's not, all right, not a question of just sympathy. It's a question of disagreeing with the government of the United States. And we do demand from the government of the United States to adopt a policy in the Near East, which is friendly toward Israel, don't they? Of course. And the American Jew of the 30s, whom I found when I came here, was not ready for it. He was not ready for it. He would have never taken the risk. Yeah. It is something new to the American Jew. A new sense of pride, a new sense of courage, and particularly, a new awareness of his own identity. And when you have that awareness of your own identity, you know something else. As no matter how distinct we are, no matter how many languages we speak, and no matter how remote we are from each other geographically, there is a common destiny for all Jews throughout the globe. The American Jew did not have it years ago, not even the 40s during the Hitler Holocaust. And the American Jew had the same awareness as he has now, perhaps millions of Jews would have been there. He would have stormed the White House. When Roosevelt refused to receive the delegation of rabbis in 1943, 44, when the extermination of Jews in Europe reached its height, I mean, if the Jews of 1944 acted the way Jewish youth acts now with regard to Russia, which is incomparably different, you cannot say, perhaps we could have succeeded in persuading or at least, I mean, forcing Roosevelt to act. And if Roosevelt had acted, he could have saved a million Jews. That time I thought, actually, in 40, the American Jew has forgotten the Amcho. Forgotten the Amcho. Now, I'm encouraged, and I begin to believe that there is something, some metamorphosis has taken place in the American Jewish community. It is more serious than you imagine. There is pride, there is courage, in particular, I said, there is awareness, the clear awareness that I belong to the people. The great people, the eternal people, and our destiny and commitment is one. Our one. It's in Nika. Omdo al Amcho. And of course, because Amcho is then in Israel, it's beautiful. That's what is Israel? What does Israel mean? What's the word? What's the semantics of Israel? We just read it 2 weeks ago. What is the semantics of Israel? What does it mean? You have contended, troubled, wrestled with the king, with angels, the powerful enemy, almost omnipotent enemy, the Anoshim, these powerful, influential people, Batuchal. And in spite of all pessimistic predictions, you emerge victorious. Why? Because Amcha. Because there is a certain commitment on our part to God and to the people that no power in the world can break it. And if you have that commitment, you are very powerful. If you have that commitment, you are very powerful. What was the secret of the victory of the Hashmonaim? All right. Helped by Kadosh Baruch Hu. But the secret was because the Hashmonaim knew we are Amcha. And if we are Amcha, we can never sever our affiliation with Kadosh Baruch Hu. Never. Even though the affiliation is the source of pain and despair and suffering and misery, and certainly it's not a source of comfort and convenience. But still, it belongs to him. But that gives power to us. Absolute commitment is actually, is perhaps the strongest weapon that the individual and the community may wield. Because we are Amcho, we are Yisrael. We contend with many, and we prevail. After all, Buddha says that a pasuk vayovik ishime. Adalisa Shocha is central in Yahadut. I don't know how he explains it. I agree with him, it is central in Yahadut. Because if you'll ask me what is the quintessence of Jewish history, not only in the past 1900 years, but since the establishment, I would say, of the Second Commonwealth, it's the story of 2400 years. What is actually, if you want to characterize Jewish history, the motto of Jewish history, what is? What is common to all ages and to all eras? What is it? That verse. Vayovik ishimei adalitash. We are always in opposition to something, or rather, somebody or something is in opposition to us. What it is? The issues there is. Number of issues. There was an issue during the Second Commonwealth. It was the issue of Shabbos. The institution of Shabbos was disliked by the Greeks. Not only Greeks, but the Romans and Greeks. Of the Sanhedrin, there was a story circulated in the Near East, that the Jews have in the Holy of the Holies, in the sanctuary, in the Kodesh Kodashim, the head of a donkey, which is worshipped every Yom Kippur when the archpriest and enter the Kodesh Kodesh. Of course, it was such a Alilas Hadam. You see, Lashon Hara is a potent weapon. The rumor was so not annoying. Actually, it constitutes the menace to the Jew that Josephus Flavius wrote a book, Contra Apionem. Apion was the famous anti-Semite Alexandre. Where he also, refutes the story about the head of the donkey. The head of the donkey. Then later in the Middle Ages, later, it is the problem of the Talmud. The Talmud became the symbol of Jewish uniqueness which the Christian church hated. How many times did they burn the Talmud? Not only the Talmud, but those who studied the Talmud with the Talmud. We say that the Talmud, yeah, that kid is Maram Rutenberg. We say that you keep a solid soup of the age, which may not survive. There's a slender thing, yes, I don't know. Then there was the story, Matthew, blood libel. You don't know how much blood you spill for that blood libel story. We have no idea. Later, Later became the Jew became the symbol of capitalism, of money, the money lender. It's a Shylock, one of the great Shakespeare. Tariq Adar. Shylock. Don't think Shylock had a tremendous impact upon the Goyim. Don't fool yourself, Shylock is out. The Goyim is out. It's more dangerous. Tremendous impact on the Goyim. So the Jews called Shylock? I mean, I don't know why. But in America, they call it Jew Shylock. But I remember as a young boy, Scotty used to run after me and call me Shylock. Shylock? We didn't know what Shylock is, but they knew a better word, anyway. And then the Jew became the representative of capitalism. Marx, great Marx, was a Jew himself. Well, the Jew, the dollar for the Jew, and his God and so forth. So, anyway, now the object of hatred is the state of Israel. The object of hatred is the state of Israel. An anti Semite attacks the Jew is that you cannot attack a Jew. You need a certain objective. The objective is now the state of Israel. It is a position, an intention. And they break. I don't know. I don't see it. The morning star will finally rise, but I don't know when. I know. But in Vayovik Ishime Kolal Island, all night. And, of course, we have lost many. We have lost lately 6 million Jews, 1/3 of our population. But on the whole, we emerge victorious. We still retain our identity. We still belong, are committed to the same goal to which our ancestors thousands of years ago, millennia ago, were committed. And we still assemble from time to time and study the Torah. This is Kishomdom Machas Yavon Osho, Alamcho, which will never sever its affiliation with Almighty. And who emerged victorious many times from all engagements that the foolish Malchus Yavon thought, as Brezhnev thinks now, that it's possible to erase that identity. It was a mistake then, it's a mistake now. Okay. All right. This Gadeli Yitzkade Ishmael Rabo. Your mother, what you say, the young Rich Walker say, you're a young, you're a young.